Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Last time when we spoke, David Hawkins, the editor of Congressional Quarterly Roll Call and author of the Hawkins Here blog at Gollum, we were talking about presidential candidates and possibilities. You gave us a list of your top people you thought might end up standing after all of the blizzard is over. So let's go down that line. Jeb Bush is obviously the name that is on every moderate's tongue. And yet when there are polls done in New Hampshire, he ain't that popular.
That's true. You know, he's not that popular yet, and he is not, in part because he is he's more well-known, or at least people up in New Hampshire think they know him better than most. Sometimes at this stage in the presidential race, you know, you do better in the polls by being less known. The less they know of you, the more they're willing to say they like you. One poll that I like, which is the NBC News Wall Street Journal poll, they most recently gauged the presidential field not by saying who do you support, but who could you consider supporting. And in that ranking, Scott Walker was the top Republican going away. I don't have the exact numbers, but something like 50% said they could consider supporting him, and only 25% said they couldn't. So plus 25, where Jeb Bush, it was almost even Steven. So you've got to assume from that poll that some of what they don't like is a familiarity. They don't like the Bush name. They're tired of the Bush name. This same poll, by the way, asked about favorability towards George W. Bush and Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton continues to be one of the most popular Democrats in the country. George W. Bush, one of the least popular Republicans. So if it's going to be a game of last name, if it's going to be a restoration of one dynasty or the other, that works to Hillary Clinton's advantage.
Amazing. That's just amazing. Scott Walker obviously made his bones out there in Wisconsin talking about unions. Are unions incredibly unpopular in the United States?
They are in much of the country. I'll tell you, it's probably, and I haven't been in the South and the Southwest as much recently as I used to be, or in the Mountain West. But outside of where the people listening to your show live, I mean, outside of New York, New England, the old industrial Northeast, unions are pretty darn unpopular and perceived as wasteful with their dues and not getting much accomplished for the money that people spend on their dues and driving up the cost of doing business. And it's quite a rap sheet on the union.
So if Scott Walker runs, and it looks like he is, then I think we're going to have more of the same rhetoric, right?
I think that's right. And I think, of course, he also talks about the unions, the teachers unions and the public sector unions wasting taxpayer dollars and not giving the people, you know, their best government for their money. So, yes, we're going to hear a lot of that. His most recent victory, Scott Walker's out in Wisconsin. He actually just signed legislation making Wisconsin, you know, an old bellwether of the industrial Midwest, a right-to-work state.
Yep.
Pretty incredible.
Indeed. Let's talk a little bit about McConnell and Lynch. That's an interesting thing. You have the head Republican in the Senate saying, we're not going to vote on Loretta Lynch as Attorney General unless you do as we say on other issues. What's that all about?
Well, that is all about I can say in my nonpartisan way that that's all about reaching a kind of a new low of partisan confrontation between the Senate of one party and the president of another. Loretta Lynch, who is the top federal prosecutor in Brooklyn, widely respected as a tough but fair prosecutor. Actually, I had a friend of mine dinner on Saturday night. He's an FBI agent, a Republican FBI agent in New York, and he thinks Loretta Lynch would be an ideal attorney general. So I don't know. That's just one tiny anecdote. Anyway, Mitch McConnell has just held the nomination up. More than anything, it's about one issue. So which is that Loretta Lynch said at her confirmation hearings that she thinks the president is on solid legal and constitutional grounds with his immigration policy, his executive orders easing up on deportations. So the Republicans say they're going to block, they want to block or delay Loretta Lynch for as long as possible because she agrees with the guy who nominated her on an important matter that would come before her department. Now, that in the old days, that would be a nothing burger, right? Cabinet official agrees with president who nominated her on big policy in that cabinet department. You know, what else would you expect? But in this day and age, that is enough to hold somebody up. She's now been waiting for her confirmation more than 130 days, I think it is, which is about as long as any attorney general nominee has ever waited. And at this point, it looks like she could be confirmed only because of the tie-breaking vote of Joe Biden, the vice president, which would be a record low for any successful cabinet nominee.
Yeah, but the leadership, the Republican leadership, McConnell et al., would have to bring it up for a vote for that to happen.
That's right. I mean, and, you know, and so they were going to do it in the middle of March. Then McConnell said he wasn't going to get her done. He wasn't going to bring – McConnell actually promised. He announced it would be up third week in March, the nomination. Then he changed his mind and said, no, I'm frustrated with how the Democrats are objecting to what I'm doing on some other fronts, so we're not going to do Loretta Lynch until the Democrats cave and give me some of what I want on some other bills. And that essentially postponed the standoff through the spring break. So now when Congress comes back in April, there will be more pressure to bring her up. I don't know what McConnell can use as a rationale for delaying it much longer.
Well, now, let's say that Hillary is a candidate, somebody is a Republican candidate, and Hillary does very well, which I expect is what's going to happen. And, you know, she brings a number of senators in with her. Then don't you think that Mitch McConnell may end up being sorry in terms of how the Republicans are treated based on how he's treating the Democrats?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, we've now seen the Senate change back and forth. Well, it was the first time in 8 years, but the Senate has been toggling back and forth several times in the last 20 years between the Republicans under control and the Democrats under control, and it seems that both sides are perfectly willing, with a straight face, to use the scripts that the other guys used when they were in charge. To talk about their prerogative to run it the way they see fit. And similarly, the people on the losing side, the people in the minority, are willing to take that script, no matter which party they're in, to say, you guys are being unfair, even when sometimes they're not. So memories, there's a long way of saying memories are very short in the Senate. One of the reasons for that is that memories collectively are getting shorter in the Senate. There are fewer and fewer senators who've been around a very long time. Mitch McConnell, for example, the majority of his team, of his Republican team, has been around only since the middle of the last decade. So most Republican senators have been elected in this millennium anyway.
I need a one-sentence answer. Tom Cotton and the GOP letter to Iran.
I talked about a new low in partisanship a minute ago. I'd say that was another new low, a very unusual move. For a senator who'd been in office less than 2 months to make that move and to get the vast majority of his Senate Republican colleagues to go with him. Has historically not something that a senator from 30 years ago would have thought possible.
We've been talking to our friend David Hawkings, editor of Congressional Quarterly's Roll Call, author of the Hawkings Here blog and column, covered Congress in various positions at CQ since 1995. David, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us. And we're just going to bother you and bother you till you finally say, I'm not coming there anymore.
I love talking to you.
Thanks, David.
Thank you.